Hello, I'm Ryan Beasy, and this is the Westminster Standard Podcast. The issue of protecting the vulnerable and using lawful and reasonable means to safeguard the people of God is an abiding concern of the church and the responsibility of church officers. In recent years, many have suggested background checks are a valuable tool for church courts to use both for better examining the Christian character of potential officers and those seeking to serve in the church, but also to discourage potentially dangerous individuals from seeking church office. Recently, two presbyteries, South Texas and Warrior, have submitted overtures to the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in America, asking the Assembly to modify our Book of Church Order to require sessions and presbyteries to perform background checks on all elders and deacons coming for ordination. You can find the overture passed by South Texas Presbytery linked in the show notes. And today I am joined by ruling elder Joshua Torrey, who is the author of these overtures. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Ryan.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, tell me, how did you come to the Reformed faith and the PCA?
I came to the Reformed faith the way most homeschoolers probably do, is by reading. A lot of reading. I grew up Southern Baptist. My parents are Southern Baptist. My dad is an SBC pastor. My wife's dad is an SBC pastor. And as I began to cultivate a theology of my own, a more systematic theology, I began reading Calvin's Institutes. And, you know, by about the third or fourth book, when he starts talking about infant baptism, I was hooked. And I realized that I could not be a Baptist anymore. I had to be a Presbyterian. And so I was probably roughly 20, 21 years old at that point. And slowly over time, pulled ourselves out of serving with my dad at his church. And we joined the PCA about 10 years ago, Redeemer Austin.
Yeah.
And I was ordained as a ruling elder, I think it was 4 years ago. It was right before COVID, and COVID has blurred all the years.
So I think it has.
I think it was about 4 years ago.
Okay. And still close with your family, even if not worshiping at the same congregation, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yes. So tell me about your ministry now. You're ruling elder there at Redeemer Austin.
Yes, I'm a ruling elder. We distribute the work pretty evenly with our session. But I tend to focus on teaching, leading small groups, serving on committees for the Christian education ministry here at the church, specific focus on kids. I have five children, and so catechism training, resuscitations, children's material, review of children's material is probably where I specialize here at Redeemer, apart from just the general shepherding and general teaching that ruling elders do, small group leadership, all those things. Focusing in on child education has been the bigger thing.
Excellent. Train up a child in the way he should go. And you are also involved with a certain Spreadsheet and Spreadberg. Can you tell me how you two got connected?
Yeah. So my dad and I are both engineers, and my father has been a program engineer, program manager now for, oh my gosh, almost 10, 15 years. And he taught me in his program management skills a love for Excel. And so even when I was in college, I was always playing around with Excel and using macros and trying to create the craziest functions. And in the early days of the spreadsheet, when everyone was just screenshotting it and sharing it, and nobody knew who had come up with it and who was tracking it, it was, you know,
it's a conspiracy.
As Gandalf says, you know, keep it secret, keep it safe. Everybody on both sides was keeping the spreadsheet secret. I was tracking it. I thought it was an interesting project. I thought it was something that was, to me, interesting, even apart from the impact on the denomination, as I love statistics, I love numbers. And so when it came out that this Edberg guy was the one who was running it, I followed him and I sent him a message and I said, hey, if you ever want help just doing simple function writing. Hit me up. Let's do this. And so I think towards the end of the first year of tracking, he was letting me tweak a couple things here or there to help improve his tracker spreadsheet. But the second year, as you may remember, he decided to track all the overtures. And that was a very,
overwhelming.
Very, yes, with his original spreadsheet, that was going to be overwhelming. And so I basically just said, hey, tell me what you want, and I will give you the functionality to punch in the numbers in one place, and it will populate and change everywhere else. And he gave me more or less full control on the function writing aspect, and he does all of the making it look pretty and make sure it, it color codes when a result comes in. I'm colorblind, so you don't want me doing any color coding. But Scott does a great job making the spreadsheet human readable, and I make it so that he has to do as little work as possible to just punch in the numbers that he does, and it populate all over that spreadsheet, which I think has been incredibly valuable. It's obviously given me and him a great relationship. I think we text almost every single day, if not a couple, a couple times a day. It's definitely every few days that we're chatting about what to do with the spreadsheet or just things about the PCA. So it was a coincidence. I know we don't believe in coincidences with Providence, but by God's providence, it has resulted in a great relationship between me and Scott.
A relationship over a spreadsheet. That's
yep.
But I really think it has promoted the unity of the PCA as people understand where things are, and helps us to really see the change that has occurred over the last 2 or 3 years, and how we've come together and united around 2 or 3 issues that were divisive in years past. So thanks for your work there. You were involved in an overture last year. How do you go about preparing for an overture for the GA?
So last year was my first overture that I authored from front to back. I've been part of some groups that have discussed overtures from time to time and kind of group, think tanked them. Last year's overture, which was on background checks, came from reading the domestic abuse and sexual abuse study report that our General Assembly received. And it was a first stab at just getting an idea for background checks into our BCO. And so for that overture in particular, I think what was most important to me was trying to maintain and continue the attitude language of the BCO. I think that one of the things underappreciated by the average PCA layman is the consistency of our BCO. I think we all agree that there are some inconsistencies, and there's some places where we could smooth out some apparent contradictions or confusions. I listened to your podcast episode recently with Alex Ford on Overture 2. That's a place where we're able to smooth out some of the language of our BCO. So one of the biggest things I do when I'm thinking about preparing to write an overture is to make sure that attitude and harmony and consistency of the BCO is maintained. Are we all driving this bus the same direction?
Yeah.
And that was the intent of last year's overture on background checks, was trying to maintain similar language, trying to maintain a certain tenor of the language and the freedom that is given to local church courts in our polity. I think that's one of the other big things that I do in preparing to help write an overture is, are we violating the preliminary principles? It's like, let's go back and let's read those and let's meditate on those for a while before we start throwing language into the BCO, because we have a polity that we can hurt by over policing in the rest of the BCO. We got to maintain those preliminary principles. And so that's typically what I do in preparation for an overture.
And I appreciate that so much because our polity is biblical. Our polity is good. I think there are absolutely areas that can be perfected. We've seen some perfections made in recent years, and I think there are a few more that should be coming down the pipe even before this year's General Assembly. But our polity is biblical, and it does conform. There are ways to make it better, and I think as you in your overture, which we'll discuss in a few moments, this is just dealing with Christian character. This isn't anything other than another tool for a church court to use for Christian character. At least that's how I took it. Well, tell me about last year's proposed change. I don't recall a floor debate. Was it referred back to the presbytery for perfection?
It was referred back to the presbytery during OC. Last year's overtures committee, which I did serve on, last year's overtures committee was set a record for the number of overtures that were referred back to presbytery. I think that it is fair to say that the general disposition of the overtures committee was that if major tweaking needed to be done and it didn't feel like this was an issue that needed to be resolved this year, there was mild discussion and then it was kicked back to the presbytery. And that happened quite a bit last year. And our overture was one of those. I think it was defeated. I think it was defeated something like 100-28, more or less.
I don't know if it was defeated as much as just referred back.
Sure, referred back. Good point. It was referred back about
technicality
about 100-28, more or less. And the big issue with it was that we wrote the overture from a ministerial perspective of what do we think would be the most beneficial, and that fell into a quagmire of a whole lot of logistical and legal issues, both at the presbytery level, at the state level, about how you can share this information. Can you share this information? Things of that nature that we hadn't really thought of. We were thinking about it from a purely ecclesiastical perspective. Was the best way we could do this? And we ran into the reality that we could bind presbyteries and local churches to some required steps that they needed to take that could violate their state laws. In particular, Alex Ford was one of the individuals who helped me both at GA and after GA with understanding, his presbytery spans four states, and the state laws that are required for background checks and how they can be shared and in what manner they need to be done, they could be very difficult for Northern California Presbytery to take care of. And it triggered for me an understanding that last year our overture was rightfully sent back to the presbytery, that we had swung for the fence. We had written something that we thought was consistent with the BCO, but ultimately had fallen short of something that would actually help and benefit the PCA. And I know that there was a lot of pushback on social media, and the PCA was kind of largely blamed for being ignorant and cold-hearted about these things because of, one issue and the other. And it kept, my background check kept being brought up as one of those things that was indicative or an indicator that the PCA was failing to listen to abuse cases. And
so you are the problem is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'm the problem because I wrote it terribly and we all got blamed for it.
one of the things that a number of senior churchmen, one of the points that they've made is that, if you don't like the way things are at the General Assembly, well, fix it at presbytery, fix it at session. Mm-hmm. And, we've seen a number of presbyteries, because of the awareness that you raised, begin to adopt standing rules that require background checks for their presbytery. I know my own considered or is considering, I think we voted on it once, and I think we'll have to vote on it again in February, a provision to require background checks on the presbytery level. And then we recommend it to the courts under our care.
Yeah. And I think that's super encouraging. And it's one of the things that I believe our polity gets a bad rap for is, you know, General Assembly, kind of like the SBC, the General Assembly decisions get treated as the be all end all of what our denomination cares about. And yeah. The reality is there are a bunch of men who voted against the overture that we brought last year, who cared about installing background check policies in their local churches and in their presbyteries through different means, yeah. To do it consistent with our polity. And the response back from a lot of those men is, hey, if you think that there's a way to do background checks and put it in the BCO and make it consistent, let's try that. But, you know, very often the decisions that are made at GA get simplified to worst common denominator, and nothing more can explain some of the pushback that we got last year from people on social media with regards
And, you know, my presbytery, which is, I think, very middle of the road for the PCA, you know, when my session brought our overture to require background checks, we got a pushback here, there, but everyone was in favor of the principle. It was about fine tuning. How are we going to pay for this? How are we going to make sure that it's a proper background check, not just one that you get for $10 and covers, you know, Catoosa County, Georgia. And so we brought it back, you know, the next quarter, and I think it passed unanimously. And, you know, we'll see what happens in February, but I think there's an analogy there. There's not that people were opposed to the principle. It's we want to do this right. And well, let's talk about, if you're okay with talking about an overture that you're going to be proposing to your presbytery.
Yes. Yeah. We are meeting at the end of January. January, I think it's 28th and 29th. South Texas Presbytery will be meeting to discuss this overture. And the overture has been... The general principle of the overture has been changed from what we did last year. As I mentioned, you know, we were describing steps that were going to need to be taken by local church courts that might be in violation of states' laws, local laws, any of these things. And we decided to steer into grassroots Presbyterian polity and say, hey, let's let each local church court determine the policy and nature of their background check endeavors. And so if I can summarize the overture in a sentence, it would be simply to say background checks are more or less mandatory. They can still be excluded by the extraordinary clause, but background checks are more or less necessary and should be done in agreement with or in line with the policy agreed upon by the local church court. And this gives presbyteries and sessions the ability to craft their policies to the best fitted system for them. You know, going back to my friend Alex Ford's situation up where they're going to have, you know, they're going to need to engage with four states and how best to do background checks in that presbytery, you know what? They're the best people to determine that, not me writing an overture and not the overtures committee trying to edit, you know, on the floor. That presbytery has been qualified, is called by God. They've all been ordained to that service and task, and they are the best people qualified to bring that background check policy into alignment. So if this background check is, or if this overture is approved by General Assembly, approved by the presbyteries, we will be putting in the hands of the men God has called to determine the best way to perform background checks at their level, which as you've described for your presbytery, y'all are already doing. And so there's going to be a lot of presbyteries and a lot of local sessions who are going to be able to look at this and say, you're just telling us to do what we have already wisely determined to do. And so this actually won't be very imposing on many presbyteries and churches. This is just going to be an affirmation that we as a denomination, want to see this done.
Yeah, with any professional, I think as we discussed 8 or 10 months ago, with any professional career, whether that's volunteer or full-time career, you're going to have a background check in almost any other field. And why not here? Do you anticipate your presbytery making any significant changes from what you sent me, that document?
I do not. I think one of the things that will receive pushback, but it really is a non-starter, is that some men still would want to see a definitive standard for what kind of background check is done. And I understand the heart of that. I think everyone wants to agree that this should not be paper pushing, that this should actually do something.
Yeah.
But I would call us back to the heart and attitude of our BCO as it exists. When we suggest and require that a presbytery or a session examine a man in his theology, in his sacraments, sacramental theology, church history, BCO, we do not tell those local church courts what questions to ask.
That's a great analogy.
We do not tell them how many questions to ask. We allow them to be as thorough or as not thorough as they choose. That's part of what we believe they have been given as a local church, as a local court, that authority. And so, I think that while it may be brought up on the floor of discussion of we should have a definitive standard, I think that this method is actually more consistent with our church polity to let the local courts determine the standard of the background check that is performed. And we need to trust one another and hope that every court does the best background check that they can find and afford.
Yeah. And that's a key issue. Let's see. The Overture 6 is already up on the GA website, and it does prescribe the sort of, maybe not even the sort, but the precise background check. I'm not sure about the language. So I see how you, one of the questions I was wanting to ask is, well, how do you see yours as different? And I definitely appreciate the grassroots character of the proposal that your presbytery will consider. But I'm sympathetic to, we want, I guess I can see, nice people on all sides of this one.
I think we can all agree we want the best, most thorough background checks possible performed across the denomination. But I think that we also have to accept that maybe setting that as a standard in the BCO goes against the heart of the language of the BCO. That really, the heart of the language of the BCO puts on us the responsibility to do the best we can do. And it doesn't just set an explicit standard. Overture 6, which is up and live already. I think it's a little ironic. Our Overture last year was Overture 6. So this is the second year in a row where Overture 6 will be a background check. And the standard, I think we can all agree with reading it, it looks really good.
Yeah.
I think it runs head into one of the objections that we received about our Overture last year. I don't know how well passed around it was, the Overture Committee report, but as you know, when an Overture is referred back or voted down, a subsection of the Overtures Committee typically writes up a reason, the rationale for why an Overture was rejected.
Yeah.
And more than once, the reasons that were written for rejecting our Overture last year were that there was concern about including the state in our qualification for ministers.
Yeah, talk to me about that. Because to me, that just seems or a background check simply seems like we're just doing a character exam and this is a tool. But how you've thought more about that than I have. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I may have thought about it more, but I'm not sure I've gotten much further than where you've already arrived. I mean, this is, we're basically asking for readily available information to be provided to us on a piece of paper. That's really what a background check is. We're not calling for a private investigation into a man or into his character. We're going through and we're looking oftentimes through simply public information. Much of this actually is capable of being found on your own, just going through public public information. And so
yeah,
the overture does not, or background checks in general, do not need to be perceived as involving the state in our policy of ordination. I tried, when I have argued for this amendment in the past, to make clear, and I think our overture that's going to come from South Texas Presbytery hopefully makes this explicit, that the authority always resides with the local court to process that information, review it with the man who's being ordained, and they get to choose who does it. I think what you have up there right now is a recommended policy. So when our overture suggests some policies that could be used, obviously yeah, these won't be binding.
That's so helpful to get a template. How do we do this? Okay, I know what we have to do, but how do we make it official? That's so helpful, yes, to give a sample policy.
Yeah, and so you can see some of the things that we, writing the overture, thought were incredibly important. You know, it being done in executive session to protect a man's integrity and the details of his life, but also that they're supposed to be reviewed with the man. And so it's entirely possible that a background check contains information that is incorrect. It's entirely possible that the background check contains information that of events that occurred before a man's conversion.
Yeah.
And so we need to be very clear that the background check is not letting the state determine who right, is and is not qualified. And we need to stress the importance that our church courts are ordained for this task of this making these decisions. This is just more information for them.
Right. Right. This is not a pass-fail that, oh, look, you had a speeding ticket back in 2004. Yep. Well,
Or a parking ticket, or, you know, declared bankruptcy, or
even a DUI. You know, this is not, I mean, who knows, you know, a DUI in 2004 might not be, not everybody's going to be Googling Ryan Beasy DUI 2004. you know, a DU, you know, some, anything on there, almost anything on there, I would argue, is not necessarily disqualifying.
In my youth, I got quite a few speeding tickets. I was pretty close to having my license revoked. One of those speeding tickets, I missed the deadline on paying for. And so a warrant was put out for my arrest. Like, I don't know if a background check would bring all that up. It depends on how thorough it is. But it's up to the church court to decide whether or not those, you know, delinquencies in my youth disqualifying
now.
Yeah. Right. And so one of the concerns I have about the Overture 6 that is presently up there is that it runs straight into the objection about government involvement in who it requires for the standard of the background check, explicitly naming the FBI, explicitly naming a Canadian federal agency. I think that overture at its heart is trying to do what we did last year, which is give the best standard. And it's running right into an objection that I don't think it can get around. Now, if they were to say, hey, everyone should do a background check and we suggest these standards, I think that would be very well received by some, and it would not be well received by others, but at least they would have the decision to make those calls at their local church level or local court level. So I don't see how Overture 6 can be amended without ripping out what is a crucial part of it.
Yeah.
That's my assessment right now.
And what would distinguish it from your overture, should it be sent up by your presbytery or your session? If your presbytery votes it down, your session could send it up.
That is true.
And have an alternative, a middle way, so to speak. But I certainly appreciate the latitude given to the local court to decide how to do that, and the clarity that this is not a pass fail. One of the in our own presbytery, the language we're considering, that the background check is not to be shared outside the exam committee, and it's to be shared with an executive session as you have there, and discussed with the candidate, and then they can make a recommendation based on that. And then if they recommend, you know, there's something in his background check that we're recommending, no, he can sign off and say, hey, you know, you can share it with the presbytery. We can discuss that. Mm-hmm. But it's important to leave a wide latitude for the committee that is reviewing these and then the court that will have to make that decision ultimately.
Yes. One of the things in just to kind of circle back to what we've said about this being informational, you know, when we go to a text like 1 Timothy on the qualifications for an elder, and 10 of 11 of them are on moral character, not his knowledge of the BCO or, you know, theology's in there, but not some of it's not church history. I think we need to feel, I would like for us as a denomination to feel the weight of those qualifications focusing on moral character and the question to ourselves of, you know, that first exam or that first requirement in the trials for ordination is for us to examine men on their Christian character. And we've recently added sections to our BCO that we have told local courts that we're supposed to give extensive, you know, investigation into notorious sins, the possibility of notorious sins and a man's view on his past sinful history. Does he still identify with those sins? How does he view repentance? And I think we are all very much in agreement right now as a denomination that the moral character of men is crucially important. We very rarely have to censure a man because of his theology. It happens. We know it happens. But in comparison or in contrast to how often we have to censure a man for moral issues, one greatly outweighs the other. Hmm. And I think that this is an example, it's a case where we can go just a little bit further in taking additional information in the examination of a man's moral character and save our denomination, hopefully, from potential strife in the future over some moral failing. At least we can be more aware.
Yes. Yes. And this is another area where we have to be above reproach. And this is a way of showing the world that we do care about genuine good morals, not just protecting each other's secret sins.
Well, and we care about the men. I mean, when we go to that 1 Timothy passage on the qualifications, and it says he should be well thought of or well considered by outsiders, and we're like, oh yeah, because we want the world to like us. No, it says because we don't want him to fall into the snares of the devil and bring shame. It's like we have to care about these men. Like we're doing this for them to a very large extent as well.
Yeah. One objection that I heard to background checks was the cost. How have you dealt with that issue? Because these are not cheap. At least if they're worth anything, they're not cheap.
Yeah, this is another good objection. I'm gonna, you know, just be honest. This is not easily addressed. And it's one of the reasons why trying to address it explicitly in the BCO is a bad idea. Explicitly saying in the BCO the presbytery must cover this, or the local congregation must cover this. There are some presbyteries and there are some churches who may not be able to follow through with those.
Right.
And so I don't know that my overture as written, our overture as written, can truly effectively respond to the cost issue, other than to say it grants the widest berth for properly handling it. As you have said, some of these are very expensive, and you know, a church that is well off might not have a problem with it. A mega church with, you know, 15 assistant or associate pastors and a session of 30 guys, they might be trying to offload some of it, even though they are, you know, well off. A rural church or a rural oriented presbytery, you know, they might have to get creative. But I think this is one of the places where the overture is written wants to trust local churches and presbyteries to do the best they can with the finances God has given them.
Yeah.
And we should understand that there's going to be some discrepancies to those levels. And so they're not all going to be the same, and cost might play a factor in that, but by not requiring a specific standard, hopefully this allows all types of churches to fulfill the heart of the matter in a way that is capable of being covered by their, yes, you know, by their budget.
Yeah. And I know, you know, when we at the church I serve instituted a background check policy for volunteers and officers and staff, it was a big upfront cost. Mm-hmm. And the church, mm-hmm, just bore that. And you know, we could do that, and we were thankful to be able to do it. But I could see a context where, you know, $400 to run background checks, that's going to really put a strain on a small church. And I think that's probably where you're getting, would get some feedback or pushback against cost. And although in my presbytery, there was pushback because the presbytery had a hard time justifying with the BCO that requiring a local congregation to pay for something. But then there was the objection, well, presbytery can't pay for anything anyway, not because we're not willing, because we don't have the money. Yeah. So what happens then when, you know, the presbytery needs $100 to do a background check for this candidate, doesn't have it, because, you know, we got RUF ministers and other guys that, you know, they need to eat too. And they've mm-hmm. got obligations there. And how does that get worked out? You know, you can ask, but yeah, it's something that the local court or the regional court will have to play out. And
yeah, that's
just part of our polity.
It is. And I don't want to see this happen too often, but the way that this overture is written, in theory, the extraordinary clause could be used to forego this portion of a man's trial for ordination. And all that's required of a presbytery or a local church, you know, or of a presbytery in that case, is to state, you know, the reason. I'm sure RPR wouldn't be totally excited about reading that.
The reason being money.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's a reality, then it's a reality. And yeah. I think that this still allows for that. It's not going to put them in trouble for that. You know, RPR might keep track of it and say, you know, can we help you with this? What's going on?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's still an option. To double back to something you asked earlier about, you know, if there were any significant changes, I don't anticipate any significant changes, but I do know one of the things that has been echoed almost throughout my discussions with men on both sides of the aisle of the PCA has been reoccurring background checks, saying that background checks have to be done every 3 years, every 5 years, every 10 years. And that's where I tie that in with this cost objection.
Yeah.
Is that maybe in a couple of years we can reevaluate the idea of reoccurring background checks, but to insert reoccurring background checks right now at this stage would run head first into that cost argument of why it couldn't be done. And so it's why it's not in the version that I submitted to my session and to South Texas. And in at least on the surface level right now, I would be opposed to the idea of reoccurring background checks. I think it's a good thing. I'd like to see us get there, but I think we need to let everyone settle into doing background checks and understanding the cost and how they're going to work through them. And then we can have that discussion in a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually, it hadn't occurred to me, but it came up on the floor of my presbytery as well. So there must be some conversations about that. And, what do you do if a guy who's a member of good standing just says, well, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I mean, there's really no mechanism right now to force him to submit to that. Now in the future, if there was some language in the VCO, but that's really tricky language that would require a lot of nuance and fine tuning.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you for this contribution to the General Assembly next year. What excites you? What encourages you about the PCA right now?
I think what excites and encourages me right now is that we, at least for this last GA, we seemed to be arguing about less. I don't want to steal Mr. Moderator Fred Greco's thunder, but I think one of the reasons why GA went as short as it did, one, because of his brilliance up on the podium, but also we had fewer things that we argued into the ground. Mm. We had some issues that we did discuss that received concern and pushback. We had the one minority report, but even some of the controversial things that came out of RPR that had floor discussion, they came out of RPR almost unanimous. Mm-hmm. There was large agreement. The vote in the end on those issues were largely in agreement with one another. And so that excites and encourages me that we've been able to put behind some of the disagreements that we have, and we've been able to find some middle ground moving forward on the issues that have been previously plaguing the PCA.
Yeah, it was wonderful to see. I think the one issue which occurred in two different places, there's only one dissenting vote, maybe two. It's hard to argue on the floor when you've got one dissenting vote in the committee.
Yes.
But that's the beauty of our system, that minority rights are protected unless that guy gets up and calls the question. But even then, you got to get two-thirds of the assembly on your side before you can even successfully call the question and successfully get General Assembly done before 3:30.
Yes. Well, I actually did serve on RPR last year. And so I got to see the internal debates that we had in preparing those reports and amending those reports. And I came away very encouraged from that weekend week with the brothers. We worked from sun up till sundown like dogs, and then stayed up trying to fellowship with one another late into the evening. But there was great unity I felt from that committee.
Yeah. Well, what concerns you about the PCA? I should have asked these questions in different order so we could end on that
note. I know.
What concerns you? I'm sorry. What concerns you about the PCA?
I think what concerns me about the PCA is that we're going to disrupt the things that were exciting and encouraging. You've got kids. I've got kids. You've got good days. You've got bad days. You got days where four of the five kids wake up on the right side of the bed. You got days where all five wake up on the wrong side of the bed. That's what siblings do. Mm. Siblings fight. That's the reality. and we're brothers and sisters in Christ in this denomination, we are going to disagree. We're going to find something to disagree about. And that is okay. The question is, how are we going to go about doing it?
Yeah.
Are we going to allow ourselves to take it to the worst possible level and then hope that we can pull it all back and work together? Or is there a way this time around for the things that we disagree about to maybe short circuit or shortcut some of the language that we use towards one another and find that middle ground where we all agree just a little bit faster? Mm. You know, I think that that is a possibility. And I think what I would love to see is that less discussion happens on social media and more of it happens in Zoom conference calls with 6, 8, 12 men, you know, chatting it out face to face, sipping coffee or maybe some bourbon if it's in the evening, and having those conversations with men face to face. I know we can't always be in the same room, but at the very least, we could go that extra mile of doing what we're doing here, where I can see you and we can talk and we can chat. I know this is a better conversation because we're doing it this way than if we were to be holding some kind of, you know, question and answer time on, you know, Twitter or Facebook, you know?
Yeah. Very good words. Good words. Well, thank you so much for your time and the efforts you put into these two overtures, the one from last year and then from this year.
Thank you. Hopefully better results this year. We'll see.
Indeed. Thanks.
Thanks for joining the conversation on the Westminster Standard, which is the podcast of Jude 3. For additional resources or to make a donation, please visit our website, jude3pca.org. And do come back again next week as I am joined by Ruling Elder Steve Dowling of Mission to the Military and Internationals, which is a ministry of Southeast Alabama Presbytery, and we'll have a discussion on the dangers of the federal vision and the Moscow mood to the PCA. We'll talk with three pastors, Todd Pruitt, Nick Bullock, and Matt Stanghelly, and how they have seen in their own congregations the danger of the federal vision movement and its harm to the lambs of Christ, and how these faithful pastors have worked vigilantly to proclaim the truth of God and to rescue lambs from false teachers. I'll talk to you then.